This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Welcome to Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. The number is 855-752-4842. Thursday, Johnny Lupinacci, man, you looking good, my friend.
Hey, man. Well, you know what? Thursday, like Tuesdays, I get to teach the teachers. So most of my day is hustling in the classroom, and it's reminiscent of when that was 5 days a week of teaching. But no, the teachers, I get them on Tuesday and Thursday. So we had a great class today talking about teaching social studies in elementary classrooms. Nice. And you know what came up, so we don't even have to take too much time to get into
it.
They were talking about the use of AI on assignments and how hard it was that they could use AI to do some of the learning things we do, but they were like the prompts that you ask make it kind of more work to use AI than to just respond. And I was like, who paid you to be in my classroom today? Because I am always like kind of beefing with the AI, and Tim, we tease each other. We go back and forth about, you know, the impact it's having on our profession. We're teachers, right? But also we're authors, we're writers, we're researchers, and there's a lot of spaces right now. I think you could probably relate if you're a listener out there, your job at your work, where there's this AI is here, or more AI is coming and our jobs are threatened, or, you know, the quality of our students' work is going to go into the crapper. You know, this is bad. There's just piles of AI generated garbage out there. Mm. Then we had a sweet guest on last week that reminded us of, you know, drum machines replacing drummers, but they didn't. They made the caliber of drummer better, you know. And then we had teased around like, maybe this is a tool, maybe it's a problem. Holy smokes, maybe we're over worried about it. But Tim, introduce our guest then.
Yeah, I was going to say, come on.
This is his jam. This is his jam, man.
This is his jam. Yeah. You know, again, you know, put out, you know, find people out there, and there are guests, there are experts who can, you know, help us out. Our guest tonight, he's a former teacher who uses his special education and instructional design background to help teachers design inclusive lessons with creativity, collaboration, and fun. His public education experience includes special education, social studies, educational technology, and digital design. Welcome to Busted Pencils, our new friend, Tom Mullaney. Tom, what's happening?
Dr. Johnny, Dr. Tim, it is my pleasure to be here. I am joining you from just outside of Philadelphia. The wind is howling, and I'm very excited for our conversation tonight.
I love it.
That's real wind, not AI-generated wind.
It's the real deal.
Okay, so Johnny, social media, it's where you meet a lot of people nowadays, and I came across Tom putting out some stuff.
We talked
about it, and I was like, hey, man, I got to have you on the show. And I admitted that I'm kind of more in the pro AI from a teaching and learning standpoint. I could see its use. I can see it. Tom's more on the cautious side, I think, to Johnny. But you know what? Great piece. Check out, though, TomMullaney.com. You can see this out. But, Tom, let's start, though, with this piece, because I think this is great. You wrote a blog, AI Vocabulary for Teachers.
Yeah.
And the whole idea of, yeah. So, in fact, the very first one on the term there, let's talk about it right away. Artificial intelligence is a marketing term. It's not a noun.
Yes. And so, and by the way, I just want to point out the one thing. So, you know, Dr. Johnny, Dr. Tim, Tom, three white men talking about AI. And we know that the biggest harm of AI is bias. Mm-hmm. I will say I have a different blog post where I talk about the AI experts I lean on. And that's definitely more representative of the country and of the people harmed by AI than our little confab tonight.
Right.
I just want to, like, let's just acknowledge.
That piece, though, too, Tom, I'm thinking, you know what, we might have an appearance number two from Tom Mullaney in the future, because I think that piece is absolutely powerful, where you really lean into, you know, experts out in the field. So, yeah, great there. But tell me about, you know, artificial intelligence. I'm running it around as if it's just like that's the accurate term for what's happening. And you're kind of like, no, it's a marketing term.
It is a marketing term. And I lean a lot on one of those experts, Dr. Emily M. Bender. She's a computational linguist in University of Washington. And my background, I love educational technology. I had a lot of fun with it. And this is the first time, you know, playing with Google Docs or FigJam. I'm all up with Figma and FigJam. I love them. And this is the first time that I've ever had a technology for the classroom where it's, oh, hey, just so you know, it amplifies bias. And it's and the inaccuracies, and there's umpteen other harms which we can get into, and so that made me really say, hey, I'm not going to be promoting this. I'm not even going to talk about it. I'm just going to read about it, and so I didn't even comment publicly really about it until February of 2024. And during that time, I learned. I actually did try to comment at a get together, a meeting of folks in May 2023, where I expressed some reservations, and that went over not well, and so that. Kind of like, all right, keep your mouth shut. But that the blessing is I got to learn and read before I said anything publicly. And so Dr. Bender talks about, you know, it's basically a field of computer science that's been around since the 50s. It's a wishful mnemonic where the people who create it kind of name it what they wish it did rather than what it does. So remember, large language models, image generators, they're neither artificial nor intelligent. They have no intelligence whatsoever. We can get into that as well. And as there's a great professor of journalism at NYU, Meredith Broussard, she says that artificial intelligence is not actually intelligence. It's just math. And that whole it's just math thing where it's doing probability of, you know, what word or text string or sentence comes next. That's a big problem. That is kind of inherent to what we're talking about here. It's not one that's going to, it'll go away. Not really.
It's, I had a conversation with a colleague here on campus, a computer scientist who gave me a hard time because I did a presentation on how, you know, academic majors are going to be, you know, kind of affected by artificial intelligence as it makes its way in. And she did exactly what you just said, Tom. She sat me down and said, look, it's nothing but predictive math. There's nothing special going on. There's no intelligence. There's no conceptual understanding happening. And like, okay, I get it. But doesn't it produce some things that are interesting, though?
Well, so I'm just going to lean on... Chomsky, all right. Chomsky calls ChatGPT a plagiarism machine. That's really all it. Like, it's just taking text from somewhere else and just spitting it back out. I think, I don't know if Sarah Silverman, some comedian said it's just, maybe it was Justine Bateman. You know, it's just taking all of these things that have been created and just kind of slicing and dicing them and spitting them back out. There's no, you know, there's Dr. Bender says, it might as well be a magic eight ball for all the connection it has to reality. And that's a real big problem. Well, two problems. One, people are talking about, and you know, by the time high school kids graduate, it's going to, I mean, I've heard this, it's going to be a billion times more intelligent than humans, which based on what? Based on that is like, why not twice as intelligent? Why not 2 billion times as intelligent? Like, it's based on nothing. And there is just no intelligence there. As I like to say, my cat Fred and your pets at home are infinitely smarter than ChatGPT because they have actual intelligence.
The number 855-752-4842. Our guest Tom Mullaney talking about artificial intelligence. Check out all of his work at TomMullaney.com. But we kind of got into this AI vocabulary for teachers and making sure, and we just, you know, right away on the very first term, artificial intelligence, hey, nothing artificial and nothing intelligent about it. Right. Say more of a trade name. Johnny Lupinacci, man, you're like going, Tim, you better just go away
pack it up. No, I mean, I love this. We'll get back into it when we come back, but I mean, I love this because I actually, over 15, 20 years ago, at science technology studies conferences and like philosophies of science and really thinking about like this, heard, you know, experts in the field talking about how AI was the next stage of human evolution. Hmm. And it's just like them biologists were like, that's impossible though, because like you're really making a leap here that's biologically impossible, right? Remember, these are computer programs that only know as much as they're told. And there just happens to be a whole lot of text to mine that appears or presents itself as thinking, but it's not thinking, right? And so Tom's kind of helping us parse that out. And we can get into the vocabulary, right? We can talk about like what are some of these key terms. But I want to bring it back to like, so here we're talking about like teaching in schools. We've heard, oh no, teachers are going to be replaced by AI, or the quality of our students' work is going to be all suspect to, is it generated in AI, and how are these tools ruining learning, right? And so bringing it to our listeners, it's like, it comes up more than I'd like, Tim. For a few years, I'm like, could this AI thing go away already? But it's here, and it's kind of a popular discourse. But Tom has some really interesting stuff to say about that.
Well, so one of the things that I've heard this so often, I hear it in education, you won't be replaced by AI, but you might be replaced by a human who uses AI. And what I just want to remind everyone, predictions, and that's actually in my vocabulary blog post, predictions are not facts. Mm. Facts are facts. Mm-hmm. And you should, as a school district or a classroom teacher, make your decisions based on facts. Someone says, oh, I know what's going to happen in the future. As best I understand, they're not Marty McFly. They're not Doc Brown. Go with what is factual. Okay. Mm. Now, mm-hmm. as far as will student writing being affected? Of course, we can get into, you know, a lot of people say, hey, we have to innovate. So let ChatGPT through your firewall. I would say, getting through your firewall as a school district is a privilege, and you may want to evaluate OpenAI's business practices, how they treat their workers in Kenya, how they treat the creatives who they're hoovering up all their creative mm-hmm. material, and say, hey, does that align with our school and our mission and our values? And maybe have a conversation with students. It's not that we don't trust you. We don't trust this huge tech giant that is doing some things that don't align with our values. So you can definitely have that conversation. I think it is tricky as far as if there's a ton of value in having students write. Mm-hmm. At the same time, homework has always been problematic. So maybe if they're writing in school, you know, things like that, that's something to consider. And also there are some times where there's so many other ways to create things for assessment, to show what you've learned. So maybe it doesn't always have to be written work.
Our guest, Tom Mullaney, talking about artificial intelligence vocabulary. We're stuck on just the one term, artificial intelligence. We can't seem to get off it. Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk, 855-752-4842. Yeah, come on, give us a call. I need some help out. Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk, Educated Educators Talking Education. The number is 855-752-4842. Our guest tonight, Tom Mullaney, Artificial Intelligence in the Classroom, Special Education, Social Studies Teacher, Instructional Designer, you know, jumping on the Johnny Lupinacci bandwagon and beating me up over the artificial intelligence. All right, you challenged me then, Tom, you know, during the commercial break to, I said, but I do worry about not, and I don't say worry, I could see it replacing people's jobs. And you were like, okay, well, give me one. And I'd say, so an example here is that, now this is a tool, this isn't generative, and we can be specific about that, but I found a tool that can take all of the audio from this show that we're doing, all of the video from this show that we're doing, and could, within 20 minutes of, it's an hour long show, can create all of the video clips, all of the transcription, all of the Twitter marketing feeds, and put it together for me so that I can then take all of that and do all of the posting, all of the promotion of the show. That's a job that somebody has to do. And I said, doing it manually, sitting down and cutting out the individual segments that I think are great, finding the audio, isolating that, that's a full-time job. The person who does that, though, tell me then how their job isn't going to be potentially at risk by a tool like I found that can do that in 20 minutes.
Okay. So that does not strike me as generative AI, where you put a prompt in and the training data, it takes from its training data. At the same time, I don't think that that task is the entirety of one person's job. So that's a situation where it could eliminate some busy work. And okay, that's fine. Of course, you're going to have to look at those clips and make sure it's just right. Adobe Express has a great feature that's AI, where you upload a video into it and then it generates these captions, which are like perfect for Instagram, TikTok, whatever.
Right.
And so, and that's lovely. Like, that's my favorite Adobe Express AI feature. Now, I want you to think about creative people. There's a really great artist. Her name's Carla Ortiz. She's done a lot of conceptual work for movies. And as far as replacing jobs, that is happening. But that's because in the corporations that pay for creative work, maybe concepts for movies or whatnot, they're willing to have lesser quality. Mm-hmm. These jobs won't go away because people want synthetic content. That's not going to be the reason. It could go, these jobs could go away because corporations want to spend less money and have less quality. And I'll give you another example. So you talked about editing, right? So think about any movie you've watched, any film. The editing is an art unto itself. And if that gets farmed out to artificial intelligence, I saw a lot of stuff with Sora, and let's be honest, Sora is a glorified screensaver. The fingers are wrong, the ant legs are wrong, the object permanence isn't there. And I've heard people say, I'll just write my own Star Wars movie with a prompt. And I would just say that every director, actor, editor, cinematographer, costumer, makeup person of every TV and movie show you've ever watched would like a word if you think that that's what's going to happen with video entertainment. I'm sorry, that's not going to happen.
Look at Lupinacci there, man.
I mean, I'm vibing with this, Tim, and I get it too. We've talked about this because that is part of the discourse is they're coming for you. The machines are going to replace your job. And I love what our guest last week, Martin Atkins, said, and we've said it before, it's going to change some of the industry. But when the drum machine came out and they came to Martin Atkins and said, that's it, buddy, your job is gone. Like, are you worried? Because now there's computerized drumming. He was like, he listened to it and it was like beep, boop, beep, boop. And he was like, you know what it did is it got rid of jobs where I had to be a crummy drummer, or it got rid of crummy drumming. It made my art and craft more meaningful, and it elevated us as drummers to be good drummers. And so, it's going to get rid of a lot of, so in the classroom, it's going to get rid of bad teaching. And then, you know, it's not the cure, like it's not the silver bullet, but it requires us, like I started the show, I'm not by any means the best teacher in the world. We all struggle and have our ups and downs, but you know, my students are like, hey, it's harder for us to use AI to do these assignments than to just do them. So it's not more efficient for them to use the tool. And so that's by design. Like, I don't want them doing busy work. No teacher wants that. I want meaningful assignments that I can have sort of a good assessment of where they're at with their learning, right? If it's something that AI can just breeze through, it's probably not meaningful and lasting enough for me to waste class time on. And so it's busy work. So I think in some ways it's pushing us to be better at our jobs. And then like Tom was saying too, I talk to a lot of people who majored in journalism or who do writing or who do marketing, and they're in these jobs where they're like, man, I can't wait until I can do something I care about. Like, I'm creating content that's just like, it doesn't even matter. Like, I could write anything and I'm getting paid peanuts by the line or whatever. And so their skill could be used for so much more. And so maybe the AI will replace some of those jobs so that these folks who are highly qualified to do more meaningful work will be able to do that work. I think it's going to change things. But
see, if large language models were marketed as, hey, this is going to liberate people who, you know, have jobs that they don't like from tasks that aren't important and meaningful and rewarding, then I don't think we would have a lot of concern. It's being marketed as super intelligent, as doing as able to do the work of creativity, which humans have done since the dawn of advanced thought. See, yeah. In a lot of ways, large language models are kind of, they're not scoped. That's what a lot of the experts say, is that they're not really scoped. It's kind of like, hey, it's for everything. And that kind of means it's for nothing. Mm. So that's kind of like, if we scope it to something where, for whatever reason, the bias and inaccuracy, and of course, we haven't even gotten into the environmental and all that, and the copyright, you know, the plagiarism. Right. There's umpteen harms. And I will say about harms just real quick, and I understand, like, we're talking to educators, like, so you're going to be thinking about, kids using it to cheat, right? At the same time, something that is amplifying bias, is stealing work, and is really energy resource intensive. It's a, like, to me, I'm just like, there's all these other issues. Like, student cheating feels very small. I understand in the world of education, it's kind of like what's on our mind, but in the bigger picture, student cheating seems kind of inconsequential compared to
that. I totally agree with you on that, Tom. I do, because I think that concern is such not a concern, because, you know, well, I would say, guess what? They're already using it to do those things. And if you're concerned about that, no. Now, I think what we're talking about, though, should we be, maybe this is the question, you know, until we're coming up on the next break, maybe this is a question to ponder as we come into this, but shouldn't we be teaching students everything that we're talking about here right now? And wouldn't we need to do that by showing them large language models and bringing them into the classrooms so that they can have these experiences that you're talking about, Tom? And you're talking about, you know, the energy used to create these large language models. How do we explain that to them if we don't give it to them, give them the opportunity to mess around with it, to play with it? So that's kind of where I'm coming from. Our guest is Tom Mullaney, special educator, social studies teacher, instructional designer, awesome person, TomMullaney.com. Artificial intelligence, Slecker's taking. Oh, yeah, help is on the way. For somebody, I think me, Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk, Educated Educators Talking Education. Our guest, Tom Mullaney, educator, instructional designer, artificial intelligence expert, 855-752-4842. Really critic. I'd say critic. I was waiting for you to put in there as a critic. All right. So, Tom, okay, we need to be hesitant. We should be concerned. It's not going to do these things. Before I want to give you the superintendent example, I was saying, though, let you say artificial intelligence maybe isn't the best thing to call it. I got to give you an opportunity to go with the acronym SALAMI. Why is SALAMI a better reference to artificial intelligence?
All right. So this is from a computer scientist and former member of Italy's parliament. His name is Stefano Quintarelli. Okay, got it. And Quintarelli says, instead of AI, call it SALAMI, systematic approaches to learning algorithms and machine inferences. I'm happy I have that in front of me. I can never memorize it. And what Quintarelli says is that if we start, instead of using AI, say SALAMI, so when we ask questions, so will SALAMI have emotions? Will SALAMI acquire personality? And I've heard people say in the K-12 space, you know, AI will have emotions and values and judgment. Again, will SALAMI have that? It won't. Can you possibly fall in love with a SALAMI, right? Anyway, that is just a little bit better as far as, especially with the anthropomorphization. Right. I think Emily Bender has a great one. She says, you know, it's automation. And actually what that example, the editing example you talked about, that's automation to me. That's what that sounds like. Pattern recognition. And then another one, which to me is great for large language models and for image generators, synthetic media extruding machines. That one to me is precise. I love that one.
That is, yeah, I can see that. Okay, and got to go with another term though too, because the commonality between all three of us is our background in social studies teaching, and there's a term, Eliza effect, and I've put, you know, help us understand that term. And I would say, so as a social studies, particularly history teacher, you can hear, and I've been maybe one of the people who've even said this, the idea of using a large language model and setting up the, you are now Abraham Lincoln. I want to engage Abraham Lincoln. Please take on Abraham Lincoln and let's have a conversation about slavery. Go, large language model, the Eliza effect, help us out, Tom. You're saying horrible, don't ever do it.
I wrote a blog post about that. And I cited a lot of people. I talked about the inaccuracies, the bias. And whenever you talk about inaccuracies and biases of large language models or of image generators, it's like being a prosecutor, you know, in the Elizabeth Holmes or the Sam Bankman Fried case. It's the evidence is overwhelming. What are you going to focus on for the jury? So we have the known biases. We have the known inaccuracies. And by the way, and something you talked about before the break about, well, we should have kids using large language models. That way they'll learn these concepts. I would say a couple things. One, would you have children jumping right into Instagram and Twitter in 2009, 2010? And two, the terms of service for ChatGPT, Gemini, basically prohibit that. You know, you're supposed to be 13, and even at 13 with ChatGPT, you're supposed to then, till 17, have parent permission. So you're supposed to get parent permission for every single student who does it. So the idea is, well, we'll do it through the teacher. So it's a stochastic parrot. What you type it, okay, Abraham Lincoln, let's ask you a question. You can do your run through day before. Oh, Abraham Lincoln's really, ChatGPT is really answering these questions. Well, I like those. And then the next day, it'll say something completely different because it's stochastic. It's only ever by chance, and it only ever gets things right because it's just a coincidence. And then we do the interpreting and say, oh, that text is correct. So to me, I think using chatbots as a guest speaker is a very, very fraught thing to do. And I mean, I've heard of people doing it with Anne Frank, Harriet Tubman. Please. And that's... So first of all, beyond the speaking for the dead, I hate that. Like that's creepy. But also we're talking about an industry. The New York Times documented the big AI funders are exclusively male and mostly white. And so the idea that AI is going to give voice to a Shirley Chisholm, a Harriet Tubman. I have so many problems with that.
Absolutely.
Johnny, I was gonna say
I'm doing this mind blowing thing with my hands because, you know, it like Tom brings up this important component, like this, there's this myth that like, hey, it's technology, it's gonna fix our human errors and there's no problem here. I mean, maybe someone punches into the code somewhere like, don't be racist, right? And so it's gonna be this non-biased, you know, like culturally non-discriminating tool. But that couldn't be further from the truth.
Oh, and lately I've been hearing examples of, oh, let's have fourth and fifth graders use an AI chatbot to explain the Boston Tea Party. The Boston Tea Party, where colonists were racist against the people they were genociding. I don't know if that's a verb, but...
Like, right, yeah, committing genocide on, yeah.
Yeah, you cannot... I can't imagine things being more fraught and... You know, any teacher is going to teach students from marginalized communities. Why on earth would you chance traumatizing them, making them feel excluded? Like
giving them misinformation about something?
Oh, yeah. I thought primary source documents were a thing. And by the way, I thought the year 2020 happened. Like I thought the year 2020, I thought DEI was valued, important.
Okay, it's got to jump. But isn't this evaluating sources like we try to do in social studies and history teaching? Isn't this an opportunity to dig deep into historiography, the process of being a historian? What does it mean to evaluate a source? What a great source to evaluate, ChatGPT.
So here's the problem. You're lumping ChatGPT in with the Federalist Papers, Common Sense. I don't know why I'm coming up with all these colonial examples, but sure, you get my point. Yeah. ChatGPT is not a source. It doesn't have intentions. It doesn't have motivations. It doesn't have, it's literally randomly, according to a pattern and probability, spitting out words. So to consider that a source, like the Gettysburg Address, like the I Have a Dream speech, I disagree. No.
I see what you're saying. I'm just putting out there, you know, saying it's just like, yeah, when you say it like that way, yeah, it isn't a source. It is potentially drawing on sources to come up with the information. But as you said, the probability that it might not draw on the correct source, or it may even create its own source, which we know it does, which again, going back to the terms though, too, Tom, explain hallucinations then.
Okay. So hallucinations, really problematic term. So the idea is that when the large language model, by coincidence, because everything it does is by coincidence, generates text that is not pleasing to us, that we consider inaccurate, biased, or nonsensical, that's called in the parlance a hallucination. Now, beyond being very unfriendly to those with mental health concerns, the idea that this machine is doing something different, that when it gets it right, it's not doing anything different. It's not hallucinating. And that Quintanilla actually says we should just call those rancid slices because the salami is rancid. that is hallucinations are not a very good term. I don't like it. And also, there's a person I know, Tim Allen. He spoke at DjangoCon and he gave a great presentation about AI. And he says hallucination is just basically taking the responsibility off the coder and off the company. It's making it out to be this own autonomous thing that just made this poor choice, when really the blame lies with whoever created it, whoever, you know, that's where the blame should lie. And so hallucination not only is anthropomorphizing, but it's also taking blame from one place where it belongs and putting it somewhere else.
So, hey, before we run out of time with Tom, though, I got to ask this because now I'm on this and I love this because, I mean, Tom is a critic and I love the sense he's a critic because he's, you know, negating and creating. He's like not just picking on AI, but he's really kind of getting into like, here's how we can understand its uses and be more empowered as it's in our lives and classrooms. So I'm going to go right to it because this is the part I initially thought, well, can it help me with responding to emails and can it grade papers and can it, because I'll tell you what, I spend an awful whole lot of time and I'm not going to like make fun of this. I think it's important. Like the relationship we have through our grading and through understanding our students' work, every teacher out there knows like it is important. And if you don't want to do a lot of meaningless grading, we don't assign a lot of meaningless assignments, but in the sense of like, now I'm also a journal editor. And so it's come up at two meetings now. Hey, have we thought about potentially utilizing AI to review articles? Because there's a dearth of reviewers out there for the peer review process. And I'll say transparently, like we are not utilizing that or exploring that tool at this time. I can't imagine us doing that. But Tom, can I just have AI do some work for me like that? Like can AI correct or grade papers or review articles? Or help me answer my emails, like do this kind of work that I'm bogged down with.
So remember, it's a stochastic parrot. It has no intelligence and no ability to really understand in any way, shape, or form what your students have created. And as far as the email thing, and I know, Tim, you mentioned a superintendent. I don't give that person's name who is saying that I just write emails now with ChatGPT. And the best response I've ever seen to that, which I just love, is if nobody bothered to write it, then why would anyone bother to read it? I like to tell my clients and the people I work with, or when I do my blog, like you're getting me. I use Grammarly, not Grammarly Go, which is generative AI, but I and Grammarly's AI, right? Grammarly saves my day each and every day. I love Grammarly. So, but at the same time, my blog post on vocabulary, Eliza, I just can't imagine if I said, hey, ChatGPT, tell me about the pedagogical implications of using chatbots as guest speakers and how that marries with the Eliza effect. Oh, and by the way, we didn't get to that. Just real quick, Eliza effect.
Yeah, you're good.
Weissenbaum, great computer science researcher from the 60s, created a chatbot that was simulating therapy. And actually, in that case, all the chatbot was supposed to do was kind of parrot back to you what you were saying, which chatbots are actually really good at. But when he observed people interacting with the chatbot, then you know he noticed that people were intuiting trust and judgment and onto it. People were really acting like it was human. So you have your guest speaker, your AI guest speaker, you have its biases and inaccuracies, and then you have your kids who, like all human beings, have a little belief that, oh, this text extruding computer, there's someone behind it. And by the way, ChatGPT and Gemini use I. That's a real choice. There's no I there, right? But people believe it. And have you ever met someone who believes something wrong that they read on the internet? Right. So to me, pedagogically, I talked about kind of like the problematic part of it, but the Eliza effect also means your kids might actually believe wrong things and believe that there's someone there behind the chatbot. And that's why I'd say dive into the actual work that researchers have done, like the stochastic parrots paper. There's a great profile of Dr. Emily Bender and the authors of that paper in New York Magazine. There's so much work that's been done by not by hypers, not by boosters, but by actual academics such as, you know, computational linguists that your kids can evaluate. They don't have to be exposed to chatbots. I just say, think very long and hard before you use chatbots with children.
Tom Mullaney, he's our guest. Tom, man, guess what?
Thank
you for busting pencils, man.
Check out his blog. Check out his page, TomMullaney.com. Get on there. Super helpful, Tom. Thanks for joining us tonight.
I am so honored. Thank you for having me.
All right. When we get back, Tim and Johnny, you're going to go at it. That's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education, 855-752-4842. Johnny, Tom Mullaney, man.
Yeah, the AI guy, man.
You got an ally there, man.
Oh,
you
Tim, guys, I have a hunch I have a few more, but you love to be an underdog, so I'll give you that. And I actually... You know, blue collar scholars, we like the underdog and I that you're sticking in there for the fight. And it's really good. I mean, you're bringing up really important things that I tease you about, but also it's part of our everyday life there. Like I said, there is not a day that goes by that there's not a new workshop on my campus about like AI in the classroom or how to use AI. And, you know, we're all getting targeted marketing materials all the time, but I'm saying like, I'm seeing a rapid increase in like these softwares have a new AI feature that will increase your productivity tenfold, you know, and some of them are features and programs I've used for years that I'm like, wow, that did speed up some stuff.
Right.
So it's interesting to parse out as we're getting into this, much like Tim, how we've talked like so much about there are different types of charter schools and we've been digging into that on the show. There are different, like AI as a general term. I love how Tom says it's a marketing label.
Right.
And there's different types. There's different things that are, some are like add-ons to tools and softwares, and others are like language, you know, generating. And some are like these chatbots that he's talking about can do some real damage.
Well, I mean, yeah, that part, you know, and it made me, you know, think about it, because I said from a social studies history teaching standpoint, the idea of using a chatbot to take on, you know, the persona of a historical figure, right, and the ability then for kids to potentially ask questions. Okay, you listen and you hear that and you go, well, that sounds like a really neat, interesting teaching activity, because, you know, the ability for kids to have a conversation with Abraham Lincoln, you know, it's interesting what they might learn. Tom points out, though, and going like, okay, the reality is that from, you know, the whole math concept, there's no evidence that when it, quote, takes on the persona or even quotes Abraham Lincoln, that it might not even be using the correct quotes. It might not be, it might be making things up or generating random texts that have nothing to do with Abraham Lincoln. And I kind of fought back and went, yeah, but isn't that, though, a good opportunity to teach kids about what it means to be a historian and how we have to question sources? And, you know, he did make me think of going, however, artificial intelligence isn't a source.
Yeah.
Like,
right. It's not. And it, yeah, like our producer Anya, I love it, which she just put it in the chat, you know, it's like, what if AI pulls from, you know, the book Abraham Lincoln Vampire Slayer, or from,
hey,
you know, sources
it was
that are not
a quote from Abraham Lincoln when he said, yeah, die, vampire.
Well, so Tim,
that's allowed in your paper, right, guys?
Oh. Yeah. And Tim, I've been this, right. I sort of teased this, like, I want to go head to head with AI. Like, I might die, lay down my hammer and die like John Henry in this. Right.
Right.
But I want to do it like live really quick. I mean, let's do it. This is what educators do. We like our craft is learning experiences, is lesson planning, is thinking about, you know, quality, creative things that work. And in general, you know, we usually have a classroom with specific students in mind, and that's the best kind. But this in general, Tim, I'd ask you, like, what do you want them to learn from this conversation from Abraham Lincoln? And you might say, well, I really want them to hear from someone who fought hard to end slavery. Okay, well, now we know there's like a lot of like smoke and mirrors around that. But I say, why not get somebody right now who's fighting hard as an abolitionist into your classroom, right, who the children can ask questions to? We have people around us. Or, you know, interactive, because I might say they could read about this or they could hear about it. But that interaction, I feel like, is pedagogically what you're going for. And so it's like the thought is there. But why don't we reach to, and this is what I love that Tom brought up, like, especially when it comes to the erasure of, you know, excluded people or marginalized peoples.
Right.
Like, we have people in our communities that do really meaningful work around some of these same things. And our kids should be in conversation with them. So maybe we can like plan around that, right? So like less AI and more real people to people kinds of things. And maybe we say like technology though helps mediate that. Sure. Maybe we do a Zoom with somebody. Maybe there isn't necessarily like a civil rights activist or an abolitionist like in our neighborhood or community. Well, now let's utilize some of the tools that help open those learning spaces up, and let's Zoom with one and have a real human conversation.
All right, so question for you. I'm posing this right now. So Colonial Williamsburg, if you've ever been to Colonial Williamsburg, it's where, you know, you walk through and people from the 1700s are walking down the street. You've got gunsmiths and you go into some of these places.
This is my nightmare, Tim.
Okay, but you have first-person interpreters.
Sure.
That, in fact, you know, so just this full disclosure, my very first teaching job, I was a second grade teacher in Colonial Williamsburg. That truly was my first job. Not teaching in Colonial Williamsburg, but I was in and my students, guess what? You know, when you live in Colonial Williamsburg, you take a field trip to Colonial Williamsburg.
Sure.
And my second graders got to interact with first person.
Look at that.
Interpreters
who
now,
were,
they weren't real.
But you know what? Here's the thing. I'm going to give this benefit of the doubt because I also grew up not too far from the Henry Ford Museum in Greenfield Village. So for my Southeast Michigan peeps, like, you know what I'm talking about, the Henry Ford, same thing. You'd like, you walk into an old time, right? And here's what I do know. That is a form of education. Sometimes we call it LARPing, live action role playing, But there is in there historians who have informed people. Sure, they can go off script and right. be like, hey, kids, we, you know, this is how we did blacksmithing back when the dinosaurs lived with them. But in general, those people have a role and responsibility to be historically accurate within some boundaries. Right. And so I think there is there's some validity to those experiences. And again, I don't think they can be chat bought. I don't think I could turn that over to a chat bot or to AI.
Oh man, so many, just too many questions. Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk. Man, Tom Mullaney was our guest talking about artificial intelligence. Yeah, Tim took a beating tonight, and people are out there going, it's about time.
And we might come back to this too, because our producer Anya had an experience. And I also had that experience, but with John Lennon. Like, I thought I met John Lennon, and I grew up really thinking this. So
there it is. Busted we'll come Pencils. Back to it. Yeah. Check us out tomorrow night. Thanks for hanging in there tonight. See y'all tomorrow.